Welcome to the Hospitality Maverick podcast with me, Michael Tinkser. We at Hospitality Mavericks are here to inspire leaders to create heart-centered and profitable businesses from the inside out, the kind that both employees and customers love and support. Thanks to BizSimply for sponsoring this episode as our show partner, and BizSimply is the all-in-one HR, workforce management, rotate operation software designed and built by hospitality experts to make every shift run like clockwork. And we join forces to help the industry find new ways to become even more innovative in how we lead our people, how we operate, to how we grow our businesses, to how we serve our customers. Together, we want to share strategies and tools that can make the industry thrive long term, not just survive.
But people will always gravitate towards, you know, the things they enjoy more and the people they enjoy more. It's just human nature. They'll gravitate to the things that they align with best. And why not take advantage of this? There's this idea in hospitality that everyone needs to be able to do everything, but it doesn't mean everyone has to always do everything. You know, put people where they're strong, put people where they're happy.
In this episode, we are diving deep with Matthew Cameron to discover what it takes to build a workplace where people feel safe. Matthew heads up TMC Consulting, which is dedicated to enhance the employee retention, performance, and well-being of hospitality businesses. And he is on a mission, a big one, and is to help tackle the challenge with more than 100,000 vacancies throughout our industry, and also reducing the 42% turnover rate within the first 90 days. And he does that by combining his personal journey and experience to drive change in businesses via workshops and consultancy. And you will find Matthew's journey to be one of courage, passion, and relentless pursuit to solve critical challenges which are facing our people in our hospitality industry today. Throughout the conversation, we explore his own experiences in hospitality and what happened on that journey to shape his commitment to enhance the employee and employer dynamics in hospitality. And this part gave me goosebumps. Real-world examples of where Matthew's innovative approach and tools have driven remarkable achievement for his clients. We talk about the power of job crafting, an in-depth look at what job crafting is and how it actually can impact the engagement and positive energy in a workforce. We talk about daily routines and strategies Matthew employs himself to maximize positive influence on his life and his clients. We talk about his top recommendations to build a real people-first business and much more. If you want to get more insights on what Maverick leaders know and do, as well as more backstage info on the show, sign up for the weekly newsletter, Maverick Talk. 5 minutes each week that could transform your leadership and business forever. Find the link in the show notes or visit hospitalitymavericks.com to sign up. Now, grab coffee and notebook. There will be lots of insights and practical nuggets on how to build a better life for yourself, as well as a better workplace. Be Maverick. Today, we're going to have a conversation with somebody I actually met. It was last week, beginning of last week, at the Better Hospitality Conference. And actually, we met each other during the pandemic on this famous thing at that point. I don't actually know if it's famous anymore. I'm not there. Clubhouse. And Matt is doing some incredible thing to help people get the best out of their lives and build the best version of themselves. And Matt was sitting on a panel. He was specifically talking about something we're going to dive into later in the interview, which I thought was really interesting because I'm always trying to figure out how do we solve problems better. He's talking about job crafting. I'm going to come back to that. Enough about that. Welcome to the show, Matt. I'm excited that we got this opportunity because actually we've been circling around each other for a long time, and then by accident, we meet at the Better Hospitality Conference. And it was actually you that took the initiative to come over. Oh, Michael, I think we connected before. And then we had a great conversation about, you know, life challenges and then job crafting as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is really great. Every time I met in person and now doing this now.
Matt, for people that haven't met you yet and don't know what you're up to, can you give them a bit of an overview of, you know, probably your journey and your mission and what kind of change you're looking to make in the world?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Matt Gammon, which you've covered already, but I run TMC Consulting, and I essentially look to improve employee retention, performance, and well-being in the workplace. So essentially through workshops and consulting and working one-on-one with leaders, I help them to reshape their leadership strategies to better align with the modern workforce, so that they can then go and achieve their operational objectives. It's been quite a journey. If you'd asked me a few years ago if this is what I would be doing, then probably wouldn't believe you. But it's been a great journey. And, you know, my background has always been hospitality.
And what did you do before you jumped out to helping leaders to find the best version of themselves? What kind of career did you have in hospitality?
So, if you don't mind me giving the long story, you know, I started in hospitality in 2006, I believe, back in Australia, in Brisbane, in a little fish and chip shop. And it was my first job. And to be honest, it was absolutely awful. I was, you know, washing dishes. I was never shown how to do it. And it's actually a very difficult job. So shout out to all of the KPs out there. They're doing a wonderful, wonderful job. And a very needed job in the kitchen. But without them, the entire system crumbles. So, that was my first job. And, you know, every night, you know, I was taking grief from the head chef and the owner. And, you know, a couple of weeks into it, one of the waiters didn't show up and I got thrown on the floor. And, you know, once again, not told how to do anything. Scolded for not remembering table numbers, which was a bit of a theme throughout my hospitality career. I think I always struggle with. But, you know, essentially, while the owner was sat at the end of the bar, you know, just yelling at me and treating me awfully, I decided that I was going to quit and, you know, leave hospitality and never come back. And that was my first job experience. And for a little while, you know, that was very much the case. But my brother, he had spent some time overseas, and you know, I wanted to feel a little closer to him, and he worked in hospitality. So I jumped back in, and I fell in love with it. I'm sure we'll come back to this. Like some people don't come back. I did, and I very much fell in love with the industry, and it's been very good to me as well. Worked on both sides of the world, in Australia and in the UK, both in London and in Edinburgh. And, you know, I've worked my way up from bottom to top in both bars and cafes. You know, washing dishes, picking up plates, picking up glasses, all the way up to, you know, barista, bartender, bar manager, cafe manager. It's been a great journey, and, you know, I've won competitions and, you know, awards and led, you know, highly successful teams. It's been very good to me until for a period of time it wasn't. And I guess that's how I kind of end up doing what I'm doing now. You know, that story, it begins in 2018, and it, you know, reaches its climax on the second day of 2019. And, you know, that was the day that I planned to end my life. For a period of time, you know, I'd walk underneath the bridge, you know, near home, and I would, you know, just wonder if anyone would notice if I was gone, and, you know, think I had no value in the world, and, you know, I was floating through life, and, you know, nothing really had happened, but I found myself, you know, in this place. And when New Year's came around that year, you know, I was sat at the bar I worked at, you know, I was sitting up there by myself. I was drunk, alone, and, you know, while everyone else was celebrating, I was there making the decision that, you know, I was going to end my life. And, you know, I had to work on the first, but I turned up that day, but I had the second off. And, you know, that was the day that I'd planned to do it. And on that morning, I, you know, woke up and I was at the edge of my bed, and, you know, I tied up one of my shoes and I was ready to go do that. And then, you know, I had this thought and something stopped me, and I'm not exactly, you know, like a man of faith, but something happened in that moment. And ever since then, I've been on this journey to, you know, understand what was going on in my life and, you know, gain knowledge and improve my life, but to also help others and to make sure, you know, other people don't go through what I once did. So I guess what makes me a little bit unique in this space of, you know, trying to help businesses is not that I come from, you know, an extensive HR background like most others in my space. It's that I was once the employee that people put systems in place to protect and optimize and retain, but I very much fell through those cracks. But I guess something I've not told you yet is that, you know, I scattered around briefly before, but that was, you know, at the time, you know, there wasn't a whole lot wrong in my life. If you want to use that word, it's not quite the right word there, but, you know, there was no big trauma, there was no breakup, no deaths in the family, you know, these things that we commonly think about when, you know, people find themselves in a place like me. But
so no immediately crisis going on, in principle, not like
no. And, you know, I didn't really understand what was going on. You know, I just thought I couldn't handle the pressure that, you know, hospitality sometimes brings on you. You know, I used to wear this as, you know, a badge of honor of light-handed stress. And, you know, we hear about it all the time. And, you know, I was kind of doing the things I thought I already should do. But this for me is a bit of a problem with the conversation around, you know, the work-life balance and well-being. It's like, you know, my life outside of work was relatively fine. You know, it was the work that was making me miserable. You know, the environment and the leadership and, you know, the daily grind, the 8 to 10 to 12 hours that I was spending, you know, in this place, it was, you know, it was draining me. And, you know, with that, you know, I take some responsibility. You know, I started drinking and not taking care of myself and not sleeping well. And, you know, my life was just, you know, it was work and drink. And, you know, I was feeling lack of purpose through, you know, through that. And, you know, it took me some time to reflect on my journey and to how I ended up where I did. And I now use that story, which is not uncommon either. You know, it's a quite extreme case, but, you know, it's something that happens a lot in our industry. So I use that story to help others and to make the connection between, you know, the importance of culture and leadership and people. And work does have a giant impact on our lives. And that can be a positive experience or it can be a negative experience. So with that, you know, businesses can thrive, or they can struggle with, you know, performance or retention or even attracting talent in the first place. And I guess that's why I'm so passionate about creating these environments where, you know, people are fulfilled and happy and where businesses thrive with, you know, a loyal and retained workforce.
There's a couple of things you said, like, and thank you for sharing that story, Matt, because I think like sometimes people need to hear the narrative of a story where they can, in a way, compare or see themselves in that. And I'm sure there will be people after the very hard time. And I hear these conversations all the time as I talk with people offline. where they talk about, I did actually an interview that goes live next week with a guy called Dan Simons in the US. He's CEO and co-founder of something called Farmers Restaurant Group, a very, you know, successful, progressive restaurant group. And he talked about, like, his prime focus as the CEO, which is lovely to hear, is actually mental health for himself and his workforce. And how he actually, again, he said, he says there's an element of systems, but there's also an element of being present as the CEO and talking about this. And he also talks a lot about menopause, which you think is like, so he wants to understand that because 55% of his workforce are female, and that has an impact on their mental health. So thank you for sharing that story. And it was really interesting, you know, that, you know, you get that, you know, that moment, the thought comes to you, and then you make a shift. And then you said something else I think we should dive into later. This, like, there is positive things in life. And even though things are very positive, there can be some negative voices that have more space in your head than they should. Or the work, or the bar manager, or the entrepreneur, Matt, has more space in life than he should have. And therefore, it takes over.
There was a study done, and I looked at, you know, the number one cause of unhappiness in life. And obviously, it's probably only looking at the Western world, you know, hunger and famine and, you know, war wasn't included in this. But, you know, obviously, it's going to have lots of answers, like, you know, relationship breakdowns or money or, you know, the dog or, you know, all of these things that do cause bother in our lives. But, you know, the number one thing that made people unhappy in their lives was work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that's really a good place to because I actually wanted to just to for you to talk a bit more about the work you do as well. So typical how you work is, I guess you work on a very individual level, but then also looking at how can the organization then put in the right, you can see, practices, systems, but actually starting from the bottom up, finding out where the individuals are and actually what kind of infrastructure needs to be in place. Can you talk a bit more about your approach and how that approach has maybe made some transformation with the individuals and companies you work with?
Yeah, sure. Like you say, it's more of a bottom up approach than top down, but somewhat a little bit of both. You know, it's bottom up, but, you know, from the management level, like, you know, we're not talking CEO level, but we are talking, you know, management, who I mainly talk to. It's just about understanding, you know, what people want and, you know, what fulfills them. And I think this gets lost a lot. You know, we have a tendency in hospitality to, you know, promote the best bartender to bar manager, but we don't teach them how to lead people. You know, we'll give them the functional steps of their next job. You know, they've gone from, you know, putting ingredients together to make a great drink. Now it's like, well, now you need to, you know, make the rota and do the ordering and do this stuff, but don't actually teach them, you know, the people side of things. And I guess that's what I try to help people with, you know, understanding what people want and, you know, the needs of the modern workforce and, you know, the way things always have been don't need to be the way we do things moving forward, because fundamentally, you know, they're not working. You know, there's huge issues in terms of, you know, talent attraction and staff retention and mental health in the industry. And I don't mean to sound negative about the industry. The industry is amazing. You know, some of my best memories are, you know, in hospitality. But there are issues we do need to address. And this comes down to people. You know, our biggest demographic in hospitality is 25 to 34. And they're also the most likely to leave the industry. You know, the people that work in our industry, the biggest number, the biggest percentage, they're the ones we're losing. You know, they're least likely to recommend to, you know, their friends, their family, their younger brother, their younger sister to go into the industry. So it comes down to that leadership level. You know, what experiences are these leaders creating for their teams? What environments are they creating? Is it enjoyable? Is it hard? Is it hiring, you know, how do we create environments where people want to be, where they want to work and where they're enjoying their work alongside fulfilling, you know, the business's goals and objectives. So if you can make that link between the people and the objectives, then, you know, you're on your way to winning the battle.
And I think it's very interesting from our conversations before, and I totally agree with you. I personally, and my anecdote is not really relevant, but it was really interesting because I didn't see it before very late in my career. When I was around 19 years old, I got promoted into management role at McDonald's, and I had this, he was not my direct boss, but he was like the supervisor, the ops manager, the ops director for the group. And he gave me a book. And it was Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey. And I said, what the hell do I need this book for? You know, I just need to be very technical, really good, really fast. And I didn't really read it before a couple of years after I went to uni, and there was this teacher that also had this book coming up again. And then actually I dived into it. And then, you know, I'm still reading this book. And actually I think that, you know, that he was so focused, and actually a lot of his intro to things was built around Stephen R. Covey, where a conference he used a sequence for that. But he was very much of this personal leadership, because he, and I can remember he said, you need to lead yourself before you can lead others. And I didn't understand that before very late in my journey. That's actually it's the most important, but also the hardest, because you're building that resilience to be ready for when things becomes difficult. And actually, if you can't lead yourself properly, you also can't create these environments you're talking about. So I think it's super interesting. We actually have to start there. And actually, often we start about creating the environment before we actually have looked at on the people that's creating the environments.
Yeah. There's a thing in mental health first aid training that, you know, you need to be able to take care of yourself before, you know, you take care of others. And it's the same with leadership. I completely agree with you.
What is the typical challenge you see when you come in and there is an environment that's not working? Where typical has it gone wrong? Is it on is it the systems? Is it individuals? What is it typical?
The first thing that came to mind when you were speaking just before is almost like I'm hesitant to use the phrase, but almost like a cycle of trauma. You know, you mentioned that manager at McDonald's, and, you know, he obviously was on his way to, you know, understanding leadership and tried to, you know, guide you and help you. And that's amazing. But then you also have the other end of the spectrum, which, you know, someone who works 60, 70 hours a week, they expect people they're now managing to do the same. And, you know, the environments they went through, the leadership that they had, they were the role models of who they are as a leader now. I was running a workshop with a luxury 5-star hotel in London, who I obviously won't name, but there was a man there who brought up that, you know, he couldn't get people to work an extra hour or an extra 2 hours after their shift, or, you know, they wouldn't be as flexible as what he was. And he went on a little bit of a back in my day rant that, you know, young kids don't know how to work. And I proposed to him, was like, well, are you giving them anything to work towards? You know, maybe the problem's not that they don't want to work, it's that you're not offering them something to work for. You know, what are they gaining from that extra hour? Is it just, you know, taxable, you know, £13? It's, you know, are they then going to miss their bus home? You know, what are they gaining from working for you? If they're not motivated, if they're not, you know, actively treating this as more than just a paycheck, then they're not going to be, you know, willing to, you know, take up their life purely because you're in need. So there's definitely a disconnect between, you know, the management's needs and people's wants. And we're seeing this in the workforce now. There was an interesting study that showed you know, 93% of people are happy to ghost and interview, which is an alarming statistic. But there was a quote from a former apprentice, the TV show winner, who I believe runs a recruitment agency. And he said, you know, people are more interested in what they can gain from a job now rather than what they can offer to it. So if you're not, you know, offering something outside of a paycheck and you don't understand, you know, what people are looking for outside of, you know, just security and money, and these things are absolutely important. But if you don't understand that next step, then you're going to have issues with, you know, engaging your workforce and retaining them and even attracting them in the first place.
So Matt, there's no doubt about you very close to this, and it could be great to hear some of these best practices you can do as a leader, actually, to create these conditions where actually people want to do the job, because it's not just because of benefit, the paycheck, but actually because there's more. What is it that they're getting right, these people?
So it's a difficult one to give you a single answer on, because everyone is different. You know, it's why I focus on the management side of things. You know, they're running smaller teams within a larger company. So if they can understand their team and their needs of their team as people rather than just as employees, then they can, you know, take that next step to, you know, you mentioned job crafting earlier, and we can jump onto that, I imagine, at some point. But you know, when they understand people on an individual level, then they can create solutions for them. You know, there was a really interesting study that came out in January this year from Oxford University. And, you know, a lot of companies, they look at benefits and they look at, you know, what they can do to, you know, help their employees. And often it's well-intentioned. You know, they will look at what other companies are doing and, you know, what the norm is and, you know, what the research says. But this study came out and it looked at, you know, all of these individual level well-being interventions that a lot of businesses give their people, you know, the gym memberships, the discounts, the meditation apps, the resilience trainings, these things. And this is not to say these things aren't effective in their own right, but in terms of improving, you know, happiness and well-being at work, they do almost nothing. And in some cases, they are actually dangerous, because it's the business saying, you know, we've given you the tools, and if you can't handle the pressure, that's your problem. You know, it's something that you can't handle because everyone else is. But realistically, that's not true. There will be other people going through the same struggles. So this is why I think it's so important to connect with the management to change their perspective on how they lead their people on an individual level, rather than, you know, these blanket benefits from the very top level, because they're the ones that can make the change. They're the ones creating the experiences. And if we can impact them and change their perspective, then we can change the experience of people.
It is super interesting when you talk about this individual focus as well. And by some kind of coincidence, over the last 3 months, I've talked with a number of leaders, and then they talk about, like, if you want to fix this, and they talk about the staffing crisis, you want to fix that, we need to meet people on the individual level. Like we would do, we talked about at some point, we need to understand, personalize the experience for customers. We need to personalize that experience for the employees. But actually, to be able to do that, as you say, there is managers out in these restaurants that actually needs the tools as well. So actually, you need to start there to give them the tools so they actually can get that individual experience. And some managers will be very fast at that because they are been on a different journey. They got 7 Habits of Highly Effective People early in their career. I was never the best technical ops person, but I think because I had the boss I had very early on in my career, I was very good at the reasonably good at the people bit, which is the hardest bit, and you're never done there.
That's the thing. That's not a success measure. You're never done. You can always do better on this. But they talked about that actually my job as a, and these are CEO level, ops director level, is actually going around finding out if we're meeting the needs of the individual. That's my most important job. So it gave me so much hope. There was people talking about that. And then we go back and say, how does the system we have on people, if benefits, compensation, the Headspace app, all contribute to that? And how do we actually guide them to that? Because they need a guide that says, I think you should maybe use the Headspace app a bit more often the way I use it, but you need to find your own way. And it's about having these conversations more they talked about than it was actually having the system and the solution that fits everyone. But it's about having all these individual conversations. That's how you do it. I don't know if that's your it seems like it's the same thing you were saying. That's the job that needs to be done.
Yeah. Like the first four letters of the word, you know, leader is lead. You know, you need to show people that these things are okay, and that, you know, if we jump back to, you know, the stigma around, you know, mental health, I was on a panel on Monday, and it was a little bit different of a panel than what I'm usually on. I usually chat, you know, with businesses or at things like, I met you out last week for the Better Hospitality Conference, which was a lot of operators. This was purely just, you know, based around mental health and sharing stories and vulnerability. And you know, these are important things for leadership to do. You know, if you are setting the example, so if you're showing that vulnerability and you're letting those walls down, then you're showing everyone else that it's okay to. And it's creating that trust in that environment where, you know, people feel open to making change or trying these things. You know, when I was going through a tough time, you know, I remember taking a cocktail suggestion to the bar manager at the time, and he completely shot me down. And the GM was there, and he kind of laughed. And when I'm going through this time, you know, why am I then going to talk to them about, you know, my struggles or my mental health? You know, this space and this environment, you know, it wasn't conducive to talk about a cocktail. So, you know, why is it conducive to anything else, anything on that level? So, you know, you are setting the example as a leader, and you're, you know, if you're working a 60-hour week, other people may think they have to. You know, if you don't feel capable of talking about, you know, these deeper level things, or you create an environment where, you know, it's joked about or laughed about, then people aren't going to feel comfortable coming to you. So there's a hotel manager in London. Unfortunately, can't remember the name of the hotel, but Miriam Baroli, she's a super inspiring general manager, and she operates just a culture of care. She is an amazing human being and walks around, and you can see that she cares and she knows people on, you know, that personal level. And just hearing her speak a little while back, it was inspiring. And the example she sets her people gives them the, you know, the space to open up and be their best and turn up every day and, you know, present their best selves while at work.
I love to work with the team over at BizSimple because they are always striving to get better, 1% better every day. So I had to share this with you because BizSimple have launched a new podcast which highlights some of their favorite hospitality maverick podcast episodes over time. And if you're new or a hardcore super fan of the show, this is a perfect opportunity to catch up with some of the standout episodes from our massive back catalog. The BizSimple team has and will be extensively transcribing interesting moments from each episode while providing some new insights on our brilliant guest, the Mavericks. There's already some great write-ups with Mavericks like Chef Chantel Nicholson and the co-founder of Singerman's Community of Businesses, Ari Weinschwein. Find them at bizsimply.com/blog and click blogcast on the right side menu. Enjoy.
I've always been interested in three pillars: leading yourself, leading others, leading the organization. And I was doing some research in this quarter, and I like to write a lot, and not all of it comes out, but it's actually for myself to understand. And I found out with a bit of research that actually culture means care. And lots of leaders talk about that. And actually, it starts with that you have to care, because that's actually the essence of culture in Latin. And I think that's really interesting. Also, we think about food culture, country culture. It's that care, you know, the Italian care about their food culture, the Spanish as well. That's again, coming back, that's a different angle, but it's again, that care. Do you really care? And can you find that, you know, deep humanity, the Dalai Lama inside yourself? I'm not saying we have to go all woo-woo, but we have to go on that individual journey as you're talking about. Talk about
job. Are people just, you know, cogs in the machine, you know, to get the business money, or are they human beings? Like, no matter which way you fall on that, they're human beings. It's important to understand.
Well, I think Chip Connolly, the great hotelier from the one also been on the show, said on the podcast or interview that the biggest, you know, forgotten fact in business, that it's all about humans, and humans are the only thing that matters. So if you don't got that right, you're not going to win long term. Talk about job crafting, Mass, because I really want us to dive into that today. So we were talking, you were talking about on the panel about job crafting. Just give people an idea about what job crafting means and what, you know, what kind of, you know, outcomes you can get out of working with that, you know, concept.
So I believe it came out of Yale University in the States. And when we often talk about, you know, flexible working, people often jump straight to, you know, the time that they work, you know, having a 4-day work week or moving the hours around a little bit. But there are other things that can be flexible at work, and that's where job crafting fits. And I think it's really relevant to hospitality because, you know, it's all an almost 24/7 industry. You'll have some venues that are closed for only a couple of hours a day, and you know, they are not the most flexible environments. You know, they need their people to operate. They will have, you know, their need of just people coming in, and the amount of staff they have on any shift will, you know, dictate their, you know, their turnover that day, the turnover over of tables, and effectively their profits. So the job crafting, it actually started looking at two cleaning crews in a hospital in America somewhere. And, you know, the first group, they described the job, you know, exactly as what you would expect. You know, they would list out their duties, like, you know, almost like a job description, very just robotic. But the second group, they looked at their role completely differently. You know, they didn't look at themselves as cleaners. They looked at themselves as, you know, ambassadors for the hospital, or they played a role in, you know, the healing patients. You know, they created a clean and sterile environment where people could heal. And, you know, they went about their day helping people. You know, that was their purpose. You know, they would help, you know, elderly to their cars or through, you know, the maze of the hospital. And, you know, they would do these small things that were actually outside of their job description. And there was a famous quote from the study, and someone said, you know, that's not part of my job, but that's a part of me. And I feel like that's a really powerful quote, because, you know, we all are humans. We've touched on it a couple of times already, and, you know, who you are will shape what you do. But essentially, job crafting will look at three further things that are flexible at work. You know, the what, the how, and with who work is done. And people will often gravitate towards these things either way. You know, you can set up, you know, a very strict, I guess, conveyor belt system of a workplace. But people will always gravitate towards, you know, the things they enjoy more and the people they enjoy more. It's just human nature. They'll gravitate to the things that they align with best. And why not take advantage of this? You know, why not? You know, there's this idea in hospitality that everyone needs to be able to do everything, but it doesn't mean everyone has to always do everything. You know, put people where they're strong, put people where they're happy. I was a bartender for a very long time and I loved prep. Other people did not. You know, there were those, you know, rock star style bartenders who loved being on, you know, the main bar, you know, on a Friday, Saturday night. And it wasn't just about, you know, the bigger tips. It was, you know, the show. They enjoyed the show. They liked to put their personality and their creativity out there. So, you know, I'm a little bit more introverted while I did enjoy that. You know, I loved the meditative process of prep. So if you flip down roles and you put that bartender on all of the prep shifts, you know, is he or she going to be overly happy? You know, they want something out of this job. They're, you know, attracted to something about this job. Why not take advantage of that? Obviously, you know, there will be times where they do need to do, you know, a prep shift and, you know, it's not that, you know, black and white, but, you know, if you can understand what people want and what they gravitate towards, and you could take advantage of this. And, you know, from that, you can build, you know, developmental plans and you can help them feel like the architect of their own day. You know, they have impact on the outcome of their day. And I guess there's this worry that with this, you know, you're creating chaos. You know, people are only going to do what they want to do. And, you know, there'll be other jobs that won't get done, but, you know, one person's favorite job will be someone else's most dreaded. You know, I personally, when I was running a bar back home, I would be the one working a 14-hour shift. I would work open till close, and I'm not recommending we do that at all. But, you know, at the end of the day, I would be the one mopping the floor, which was the final job. You know, I was the first one on, I was the last one finished, and I would take pride, you know, seeing my team sit down with a beer to work while I'm finishing the final job. Like, I took pride from that. I got happiness from that. So I don't think it's a case of, you know, people won't do certain jobs. You know, people will work as a team if they're inspired to work as a team, if they find purpose in their job. You know, they will all work together to get it done, and people will have their favorite thing and people will have their less favorite thing. But, you know, if there's more than, you know, just a paycheck, then they're going to work together and they're going to come together and, you know, craft their own day, be in control of their own lives. And with that comes heightened engagement and heightened productivity and performance and, you know, happiness at work. You talked about a talent crisis in hospitality. You know, when people feel these things, they typically don't really leave a role.
I was like sitting and having my own reflection as you were talking. I was thinking back to my McDonald's days where I was like a shift manager, and I absolutely outperform morning shifts. So that means the way you prep to the whole day. And I got satisfaction to see that actually that preparation made sure we hit the performance we need within the team, within revenues, because it all comes down to preparation. I'm a very much like, I like to chop. I like to actually sharpen the saw and chop the wood and carry it. I don't mind. I like that piece of work. It's just the other people hated that. They wanted to come as the big part of the day, the night shift or the evening shift, where the sales are the highest and where they can orchestrate the team. But at that point, I was tired because I'm a morning person. So I like to get up early and go early to bed. And it's always been like that. So it's very interesting, I was thinking. And we often forget that. We don't ask that question. We just think, oh, well, he's a great manager. Let's put him on there. But actually, maybe we don't actually get the optimal out of that person, or we're not giving them the right jobs on the side of that, giving the right responsibility. Like, to become a restaurant manager, you had to be passing scheduling exercise, which means like very tedious. And there's a lot of managers I work with that I love doing that because it's a Tetris thing. I love to, but lots of people don't like scheduling. So why are you giving them that task? They have to pass that to be the good restaurant manager. So that's just a couple of examples. I love that around the job crafting.
It, just goes back to understanding good people and, you know, what they, you know, value in their role. And it's crazy what you can achieve when you finally, you know, you do this. And that's why, you know, from that management level, you know, it's so important to just take a little step back and let those walls down. And one of the most valuable things that, you know, I see in the workshops I run, you know, I'll just ask the group of, you know, heads of departments, you know, why did you get into hospitality? Like, make them sit back to, like, you know, their much younger self. And there's been some really, you know, inspiring stories. And from that, you can understand their journey. And if more people were asking questions like these, you know, why do you want to work for me? Or why do you want to work in hospitality? Well, what are your goals? What are you looking to achieve? You can, you know, understand people and their journey, and you can help them, you know, achieve their goals while also achieving the business's goals. It comes down to just that, understanding people. But I do more than just, you know, asking people questions. It's a little bit more than that, but that's the fundamental piece. You know, if you don't understand people, then you don't understand business.
And you don't understand if you don't ask, I always say. So I always talk about the potent questions, and the potent questions are the questions that you, in a normal environment, wouldn't ask. So exactly all those questions, the why, and, you know, how good are we actually looking in the mirror, constantly challenging what we're doing. If we're doing well, let's make sure we don't get complacent. That's what some of the best organizations do, Singerman's, other mavericks like Pizza Pilgrims in the UK. I can talk about, they ask themselves that question all the time, these potent questions, on every level of the business, so all the way down to the individual employee. A couple more questions, because it's a great conversation, Matt, and that's what happens with great conversation. You run out of time. But there's two things I wanted to ask for the audience as well. What do you do now to make sure you get up every day and have the best version of yourself and make the most positive impact? What is, like, do you have some, like, kind of rituals? Is anything you're doing to make sure Matt doesn't go back into the dark space he was in?
Yeah. For me, physical fitness is a huge part of my life. When I was sat on the edge of my bed that day, the decision I made was, you know, why not one more month? You know, the bridge will still be there in a month, but why not just throw myself headfirst into one thing for 1 month? Then, you know, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to be honest with myself in 30 days time. And, you know, if I still feel this way, then go for it. And the thing that I threw myself into was physical fitness. And it wasn't until during COVID that, you know, I felt incredibly grateful, and actually made me quite emotional that, you know, when I was young, I'd gotten into boxing, and this lovely gentleman back home, he trained me, and he showed me around a gym. He owned the gym, and he showed me, you know, what to do in a gym, and I felt quite comfortable. But, you know, for what, 8-ish years, I hadn't walked into a gym. You know, I'd stopped boxing when I was 18, 19, and but without that guy and without his guidance, I wouldn't have felt, you know, comfortable to do this. I wouldn't have known how to, you know, jump into, you know, I guess, a fitness journey. And that's been a theme throughout the last few years. But right now, I'm actually training for a half marathon. I've been training since October. Unfortunately, I had a bit of a knee injury, so I've been rehabbing that, and I'm currently training twice a day. So to answer your question, you know, the thing I do in the morning these days is I exercise. I've always been an evening exerciser, but now I'm waking up and I'm doing my stretching, I'm doing a bit of cardio. And anyone knows me, they know I'm never a big fan of cardio. It's more about the lifting the weights. But like the mental benefit of just getting up and being active has been a game changer for me. You know, in the start of winter last year, you know, I was struggling getting out of bed. I'll be completely honest. Like, I was starting my day with, you know, no sense of purpose. I was rolling out of bed and making a coffee and slowly starting my day. And ever since switching to, you know, twice a day, and I'm working out for pretty much the same amount of time, it's not like I'm doing double. Ever since I've made this change, you know, my concentration so much higher, my mood's better. I'm far more present. And, you know, for me, it's exercise, but I think the being present and just taking that time for myself is probably the important bit. And, you know, for me, it's exercise. For someone else, it may just be hanging out with the kids or going for a walk or, you know, meditating. You know, it's just about finding that space in the morning. And for me, it's changed my life. And I wish that it wasn't so life-changing, because I'm not sure if I want to be someone who works out twice a day for the rest of my life. But right now, I'm incredibly happy doing it.
Yeah, and I guess also what I've learned over the years, rituals change to your circumstance, and you build on them and you do other things, and you then adapt again. Then you have this arsenal of trained rituals you can bring back. And I have the long version every day, then I have when I get a little bit busier, I have a shorter version, and then I have like the absolute minimal viable product that needs to happen, which one of them is meditation, one of them is reading. And if I do those things, and then it's exercise, actually, I have to exercise X amount a week. And when I had the time, I did both morning and evenings like yourself. And it really depends on where you are, but you just need is silence. It's that me time you talk about. So the dust can settle in your brain, because there's so much hitting the brain. What is the top advice you would give to leaders out there trying to build this business as a force for good? Because I think most leaders have the right intent. They just get caught up in things.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I don't think I've ever met a manager that wasn't well-intentioned. So I think this topic can be a little bit intimidating for some, you know, improving well-being and retention, and such a big conversation. So the biggest piece of advice I would just give is take the first step. You know, the first step's the hardest, and it can be a small step. Mm. It can be a very small step, but just be open to making change and be curious and see what is out there, and just start talking to your people. You know, surveys are great. They can, you know, give you a higher level view of things, but they won't give you, you know, the intimate knowledge of your people. You know, they're a tool for, you know, the greater business to understand, you know, the larger ecosystem. But, you know, I've found some studies come out recently saying, you know, a fair wage is the most important thing to the people. And sure, but like the way that's worded, you know, is any employee going to say no?
Yeah.
Like, is anyone going to say, no, I don't want a fair wage? You know, no wonder that comes up, you know, 98% of people. Like, I'm more worried about the 2% that didn't. So, you know, it's taking that first step and understanding your people and what they really want. Because the reasons why people leave jobs are rather interesting. The things that, you know, appeal people at work, they're rather interesting. And knowledge is power. When you have this, you can move forward. And, you know, often people don't know where to start. I would say just start with your people, because, you know, I mentioned the Oxford study earlier. Often the focus is, you know, on benefits. But I'm very much on a mission right now to bring culture and leadership into this conversation, because I feel like without that, then, you know, businesses may just be throwing money down the drain with benefits packages, because they may not be doing their intended purpose. They're well-intentioned, but without that day-to-day ground level, you know, environment, then they may be ineffective. So take that first step, be curious, and see what you find, because only when you find it, did you then start acting on it. You know, the curiosity is the first step, the action is the next step. But without taking that first step and knowing where to start, then you'll never walk too far.
I love that, Matt. That's a great way to end this amazing conversation. Where can people connect with you, Matt, if they want to talk more about job crafting or just check out what you're up to and what you share online?
So best place is likely LinkedIn, Matthew Cameron on LinkedIn. I've got a website as well, but I'm in the process of building a new one, and that is thatmattcameron.com. And feel free to email me at chat@thatmattcameron.com, but LinkedIn I'm quite active on, so if you want to find me there, it's probably the easiest place to see a little bit more about what I do in shaping these environments and shaping leadership and, you know, helping people be more fulfilled and happy at work, and for businesses to be thriving at the same.
Great, Matt. Thank you so much. I'll send you power and energy on the journey, and looking forward to connecting more as we move our way through the hospitality world.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
I really appreciate that you're listening in. So if you enjoyed today's conversation, please share with others, rate it or give it a review, or subscribe to one of our channels, which all can be done via the website hospitalitymavericks.com. I believe that reading books is key to become a great leader. So I've helped you with a curated list of some of the books that have impacted the guests here on the show and myself over the years. Find it on Hospitality Mavericks website, hospitalitymavericks.com, under the reading list. A big thank you to BizSimply for supporting us, bringing great insights, strategies and tools to help leaders to become better every day. Check them out at bizsimply.com, on their social at bizsimply or bizsimplyhq. You can also email them directly at podcast@bizsimply.com. If you have any ideas and feedback for the show or other thoughts, reach out to me via LinkedIn or my email, michael@hospitalitymavericks.com. I'm Michael Tingsher, and you've been listening to the Hospitality Maverick podcast show. Be Maverick.